Oh, I did? All right. And I recorded last Wednesday, so we're up to speed.
Are we the same as them now? Are we pretty much
same place. We're back on schedule. All right. So what I wanted to do in the time remaining is a little bit of sort of an analysis of this concept of Kira Uba Aron, looking in the Aron. If it's looking in, then, as we said, you know, that's sort of the Indiana Jones version of the story, which I think to an extent fits the story of the text, Kira'u Ba'aron. They looked inside. You just can't do that. It's bad enough you can't look at. You're certainly not allowed to ever open and look inside. The kaporet, remember the kaporet is the cover of the Aron, and the kufim sit on top of the kaporet.
Right.
Kaparet was never allowed to be removed from the Aron. And there's a correlation there. There's a whole theory there. But even to look at the Aron was considered prohibited. Did I show you the Psukim in Bamidbar? Did we do that last week? We looked at the Psukim in Bamidbar of how they moved the Aron on a regular basis in the Mishkan, in the desert.
When they
walked into the Kodesh HaKodesh and they had to do so, they had to take the parochet down and cover the Aron at all times.
It's
a quick glance.
But we went by Midbar.
It could have been anywhere. Tanakh is Tanakh. Right? You can be anywhere and anywhere. That's the whole beauty of it. But if you take a quick glance at the beginning of Parshat Naso, which is Bamidbar. Actually, it's the end of Bamidbar. Perek Dalet.
What page?
That's a good question.
Bamidbar, Perek Dalet?
Perek Dalet, beginning of Perek Dalet. What page?
Page 160.
160. So it's describing the various children of Levi and each one's job, each one's responsibility. The designation of the children of Kahat. Everybody have it? Beginning of Perek Dalet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From 30 and up. Pasuk Dalet, Zot Avodat B'nei Kahat Ba'ol Moed, Kodesh HaKodeshim. Their responsibility was to take apart and carry the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Uva Aharon Uvana V'binisoa HaMachaneh. So when the Machaneh was beginning to move, remember this is the Mishkan in the desert. So the Mishkan in the desert is a portable sanctuary. Part of this portable sanctuary are all the Kelim. If you're never allowed to look at the Aron, how do you move the Mishkan?
Right.
If you're never allowed to look at it, how do you take apart the Mishkan if you're never allowed to look at the Kodesh, what's inside the Kodesh HaKadosh? Remember, the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKadosh once a year on Yom Kippur. And even then, he covers the Kodesh HaKadosh with smoke. He fills it with smoke of the Ketoret, so you can't look at the Aron. How do you go into the Kodesh HaKadosh and remove the pieces of it or take it apart if you're not allowed to look at it?
Magic.
Right?
Or it with a blank.
Exactly. So that's exactly what they did. Zot avodat b'nei kahat באור מועד, קודש הקדושים, ובא אהרון ובניו בנסוע המחנה, והורידו את פרוכת המסך. Remember the outer, what divides the קודש הקדושים from the קודש? The קודש is where the Aron, the Shulchan, and the Menorah, and the Mizbeach HaZahav exist. They sit. And the קודש הקדושים inside is where the Aron is. What divides them?
A curtain.
The curtain is called a parochet.
Mm-hmm.
So the Kohanim is they would take apart the Kodesh HaKadosh, and the first thing they would do is they would unhook the parochet from the outside. V'chisuba et ha'adut. And they would literally, you would take this big parochet, just floor to ceiling, unhook it from its curtains, and carry it forward, so that the Kodesh HaKadosh essentially shrinks as you carry this parochet, and throw it over the Aron. So you covered it with the Aron before you ever looked at the Aron. The only thing that's in there is the Aron. So you literally carried it and you just blanketed the Aron with this parochet. V'natnu alav kisui or tachash. And on top of this parochet, you put a covering made out of the or tachash. This tachash was the leather covering, the type of animal skin covering that was on top of the Mishkan as a whole. Ufarsu beged klil techeilet milamala. And on top of all of that, a blanket of techeilet, a covering made of techeilet. And then you could carry it. So essentially what you had was an aron, where the entire aron itself was covered with the parochet of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the covering of the Mishkan, the Or Tachash, followed by the covering of the Tchelet. So it was like a walking Kodesh HaKadoshim that was never accessible. You never, ever, ever saw this aron. It was completely
covered.
And so when the people of Beit Shemesh are standing out there in the field, coming back to Shmuel, Perek Vav, which is page, where are we? Perek Vav,
331.
331?
Yeah, it just depends what
pasuk
you're talking about.
Where we're, our whole story. But when you come back to Yud Gimel and Yud Tet, Ki Ra'u Ba'aron, they looked at the Aron. So you could argue that they opened it up and looked inside, but it's also possible that they just, even just a visual glancing at the Aron was complicated, it was problematic. You were never allowed to do that. The Aron was never taken out of the Kodesh HaKadosh. And so that's where we are, we're up to. There's one additional possibility in this whole story, and that is what I wanted to address today. Which is, what is the religious or spiritual significance of this notion of looking at the Aron? Why was that so problematic to the point of having inspired an entire Hollywood film around this theme of looking at the Aron? And I think there's another component to the story that will take us in a different direction. So far we've had two. One is that they put the Aron on this stone together with all of the golden statuettes of various things that, you know, you put the Aron together with the idolatry and you're sort of one of a pantheon of gods or a idolatry, Pesel Umatseva, sitting there on top of the stone together with the Aron, not acceptable. The second was this notion of looking inside the Aron or glancing at the Aron, seeing it in a kind of a casual way, which was not allowed even in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And here they are dancing in the fields, celebrating with the Aron in open, plain view. That, too, was unacceptable. The third possibility is to go back to something which we discussed a while ago, when we read through the parak the first time, but we kind of asked a couple of questions and then we left it. And that is that in addition to the Aron, and in addition to the Achbarei Zahav, and in addition to the Tchorei Zahav, the other piece of the story is, that seems to be a centerpiece of the story, is this stone. Mm-hmm. The Even HaGdolah, which is mentioned twice, which gets transformed into the Avel HaGdolah, which is a play on the word, Avel, Avelut, Vayit Abalu, right, the Avelut. What is the issue in this stone? Why is this? Who cares about the stone? Why is it so? Why does the Navi have to tell me three times that this story is about placing the Aron on a big stone?
Evan is Gedolah. Evan is Nekeva.
Evan can be Nekeva. It's related to the earth, ground. It's usually Nekeva.
Like Aretz HaTovah. A symbol of importance to the rest of the.
So we're going to talk about this stone. This stone now is the subject of our next discussion. We'll pass that down.
Does the Medrash or anybody talk about what all these coverings look like or what they really were?
There's one extra.
Do we have any feeling about striped flowers? What kind of?
We know exactly what they look like.
And how do we know that?
Because the Torah is very specific. I mean, there are various opinions, but the colors are specific, the images that were embroidered on them are specific, The only thing we have some dispute about is there's the parochet that separated the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There's some dispute. There is some dispute as to whether or not the Mishkan coverings on top that's the parochet. Where is it? We know that the Torah sets out three different kinds of coverings. One is called the Mishkan, which was this embroidered covering that was made up of all the different threads that the Torah identifies, the different colored threads in the Mishkan, and had the embroidered kruvim in the actual picture. The second, on top of that, there was a covering made out of goatskin, Riot Izim, and it was called an ohel. This was called Mishkan. This was called ohel, so the ohel ala Mishkan. And then, on top of that, there was Orot Elima Odamim, the Tachash. Orot Chashim Lamala.
So, in other words, all these coverings were on at all the time.
Yeah, in the Mishkan in the desert.
Right.
When they traveled, they took it apart.
Right.
So this, the only machloket here is we don't know if this was just on top. This was like a colorful animal that had, I don't know where they got it, but it was just on top, or there's some opinion that said that it didn't hang over the sides. It was just on top. Mm-hmm. But pretty much the rest of the Mishkan is there's so much detail between Parshiot Tum and Tetzaveh that we have a fairly good, and there are multiple versions of the Mishkan models and images and drawings. They're all very similar.
Did Bezalel design it, all those? Or?
The Torah designs it,
long
and Bezalel implements
it.
Right. So, what I want to do is I want to segue into a little bit of a discussion that is broader than just the story of Beit Shemesh, and that deals with the whole role of this Evan. Because who really cares about an Evan? Like, why? Navi goes out of its way four times to tell me about this Evan. This has to be something there beyond just the fact that it was somewhere to put the Aron. And if I start to trace through the story of the role of an Evan versus whatever else is going, we're going to talk about, suddenly we see that there's a language the Torah is using that's foreign to us because we're not familiar with it, but it's a language that if we can decipher, there's a code here. Mm-hmm. It's a very powerful code.
But you know, the stone plays parts in our history back from
Russia,
Yaakov.
That's,
I mean, there are plenty of.
We're going to do a lot of flipping.
Prepare. We love
it. Dina's favorite.
Right.
Exactly right. Because you are 100% correct. There's a lot of pieces
stones.
To this. A lot of stones, right? So we have Abraham going back and forth in the land. There's a building altars. We have, if you take a look back in Shmos, Perek Chaf, I believe.
My favorite was always Yaakov and stone. The way
We're going to go to that story in a moment.
But this is a sense of difference.
Correct. So here it says in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, the end of Perek Chaf. What page?
It's 87.
Pasuk says, Chaf Aleph, Mizbach Adama Ta'aseli. If you make a mizbeach needs to be made out of adama. Earth. V'zevachta alav et olotecha ve'et shlamecha et tzuncha ve'et bekarecha. And upon this altar, mizbeach, made out of earth, you will bring all of your various offerings. V'chom makom asher azikir et shmi avo elecho ve'rechticha. Every place where you mention my name, I will come and I will bless you. V'im mizbach avanim ta'aseli. If you make a mizbech out of stones, lo tivne eten gazit. What you may not do is make the mizbech out of what's gazit?
It says here
hewn stone. Hewn stone, meaning
what does that mean?
You can't take what's a mizbech? Mizbech. How do you make a mizbech? Take a bunch of stones and you form it into a mizbech, right?
Right.
It's a man-made structure. Mizbech is man-made structure. When you make a mizbech out of stones. The problem is that if you take a bunch of stones and you pile them one on top of the other, you're going to get a very difficult structure to work with. So how do you make, how do you take a bunch of stones and make it into a form that you can function and work with?
You have to stagger it and put something in between.
You have to carve the stones into the shape you want. Right? So that's called hewing the stone, cutting the stone to shape. See, here the Torah says if you make a mizbech out of dirt, it's easy. You take the dirt, you pile it into the form you want, and you have a mizbech. If you make the mizbech out of stones, then lo tivnet en gazit. You can't use a metal instrument to form the stones. Ki charbachai naftaleh v'techaloleh. You can't use an iron or sword, a type of instrument, on the stones to hewn it. To hew it, v'lo taleh b'malot ha-mizbechin, nor can you go up with steps on my mizbech. That's a separate prohibition. So that's the famous story in the Beit HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech had some kind of a, they're called the shamir. If you've ever heard the medrash about the shamir, then it's some sort of worm that would eat through the stone because you weren't allowed to cut the stones with, for the mizbech, not for the home mikdash,
right,
but for the mizbech.
It defiles it? I mean, like, what does it do?
Yeah, you're using an instrument of death, like a sword, and to build a mizbech, which is a source of life. You can't do that. So that's the prohibition in the Torah. So what's interesting is, what is a mizbech typically made out of in this context?
Stones.
Excellent. Stones. Mizbech is made out of stones. Good. We have that piece of information. Right? We're not finished, though. Let's go to Perek Chaf Dalet.
We're still in
Shmos. Mm-hmm. Just flipping a couple of pages.
91.
Pasuk Dalet. We're going to do a lot of flipping and ask a lot of questions today. Then maybe next week we'll pull it all together. Pasuk Dalet. Ve'yichtov Moshe et kol divrei Hashem. This is post-Matan Torah. It's actually a machloket, Rashi and Ramban, whether it's post-Matan Torah or pre-Matan Torah. But it's certainly, it's the story of the Brit, the covenant that that Hashem makes with Bnei Yisrael, Nasa v'Nishma. Let's go back one verse, actually. Pasuk Gimel, Vayavo Moshe Vayisaper La'am et Kol Divrei Hashem Vet Kol HaMishpatim. Moshe came, he talked to Bnei Israel, he told them everything God had said. Vayan Kol Am Kol Echad Vayomru Kol HaDvarim Asher Divrei Hashem Na'aseh. They answered one voice. Anything that God says, we will do.
So how could there be a machlokes, whether it's before or after? I don't get that.
Well, there's a whole discussion whether this is out of order. Rashi says this parak's in the wrong place. It should be before Matan Torah. It's out of order. It's not our issue for now, but that's the machloket Rashi Rambam. Vayichtov Moshe et kol divrei Hashem, vayashkem baboker. Moshe got up in the morning. Vayiven mizbeach tachat ahar. Ushtem esrei matzeva lishnem asar shiftei Yisrael. He built a mizbeach under the mountain, or by the mountain, and 12 matzevot for the 12 tribes of Israel. Somebody explain to me the difference between a mizbeach and a matzeva.
Isn't a matzeva one stone, one big stone?
It's a monument.
Right.
It's
the matzeva in modern terms is a monument. That's not the issue. But,
but it's one piece.
A matzeva is made out of a stone, and a mizbeach is made out of
many stones.
Stones. Right. You build a mizbeach. Vayiven mizbeach. Vayasem matzeva.
You place it in
that. You place a matzeva, you build a mizbeach.
So the matzeva is already in.
A matzeva is a stone.
Hole, so.
You designate it as a matzeva. It's a stone. You can either designate it as a matzivah. If it's movable, you can move it as a matzivah. But essentially, matzivah is a stone that you designate as a monument or as a tribute or as a recollection or as something. We'll see what it is in a moment. Whereas a mizbeach, you build. Vayiven sham mizbeach. Vayikra b'shem Hashem. Vayiven mizbeach tachataha. So Moshe builds a mizbeach and he sets 12 matzivot. We'll see by Yaakov. We'll see the language by Yaakov. Let's go back to Breishit. Wait a second. Let's see. Actually, let's start with Abraham, since I got there first. Lech Lecha.
You're not going to
ask
Shmos, right?
Not now.
Okay.
We may go to Dvarim, but we'll see.
Oh, that's okay. I left my finger.
Vayomer Hashem al Avram lech lecha, beginning of Perek Yud Bet. Hashem says to Avram, go. So he goes. Right?
Uh-huh.
Hashem says, go, you go. Hashem says, jump, you say, how high? That's what works, right? Pasuk 414. Pasuk Zion. Comes to the land of Israel. Pasuk Vav actually. Vayavor Avram ba'aretz ad makom Shechem. He goes to the land. He comes to the city of Shechem. And in Pasuk Zion, Vayera Hashem el Avram. God appeared to Avram. Right? To Avram. Vayomer lezaracha atan at ha'aretz hazot. What does Avram do? Vayiven sham mizbeach laHashem hanir'eh elav. He builds a mizbeach to Hashem who appeared to him. Again in pasuk tet, sorry, pasuk end of pasuk chet. Vayet olam beit el miyam va'am mikedem. Vayiven sham mizbeach laHashem vayikra b'shem Hashem. Then in pasuk. Goes down to Mitzrayim, comes to the end of Perek Yud Gimel, comes back from Mitzrayim, comes back to Chevron, end of Perek Yud Gimel, last four words, Vayiven Sham, Mizbeach LaHashem. Avram goes length and breadth of the land of Israel, building Mizbeachs. Okay, and every place you build a Mizbeach, the language is always Vayiven Sham Mizbeach. You build a Mizbeach. Livnot Mizbeach. Now, since Adina wants to go to the story of Yaakov.
It's my favorite.
Mine too. Let's go to Yaakov.
I think it's very
beautiful. Yaakov, beginning of Pashat Vayetze, Perek Chaf Chet. Perek Chaf Chet. Now, as we read through the story, I'm going to read through the text without translating. Why? Because I'm really only interested in one pasuk. But I want you to hear a certain phrase or word that keeps popping up in different formats. Okay, what we call a milat mancha, a guiding word. So pasuk yud, vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva vayelech Charana. Yaakov goes to Charan. Vayivga b'makom, vayalen sham, comes to a place, he sleeps, kiva shemesh, vayikach me'avnei ha'makom, vayasim mirashotav. See, that phrase by itself is interesting. Why? You know, remember the famous medrash? Rashi quotes this medrash on this pasuk. What was the medrash? They took of the stones of the place and placed it under his head. What medrash does Rashi quote?
I don't even understand. What do you mean?
Rashi quotes a very cute medrash, in a sense, cute but powerful medrash, about the stones having a big argument. Remember that?
Oh, who was going to be the favorite stone?
Right. All right. 12 stones are sitting there arguing, the tzaddik should rest on me, the tzaddik should rest on me. We teach this story, this medrash in preschool, I don't know why. And what is the end result? What does Hashem do? To resolve the machloket?
He blends them all together into one.
All right. So now let's talk about the pshat. The pshat is, it doesn't say he took the stones, it says he took over the stones. Ve'ikach me' avnei ha'makom. Ve'yaseh mirashotav is conjugated in the singular. Placed it under his head. And if you look later on in Pasuk Yud Chet, it says, Ve'ikach et ha'even asher sam mirashotav. He took the stone that he had placed under his head. Yaakov slept on a pillow of a stone, but he slept on one stone. The Medrash starts with the question of how do I have a reference to multiple stones? Ve'ikach me'avnei ha'makom. So the Midrashic answer is he combined all the stones into one. The simple answer is it says he took from the stones of the place one stone. Why is it significant that he took one stone? Because of that stone he is going to build a
mizbeach.
Right. One stone does not a mizbeach make.
One stone makes a matzeva.
Pasuk Bet. Listen to the language. There's a play on the words here, and it's very powerful. The ladder is planted on the ground. Mutzav arza. Angels going up and down. Vine Hashem nitzav alav, God standing over it, him, it. Mechloket. Vayama, ani Hashem elokei avraham elavicha elokei Yitzchak v'aretz asher ata shochev aleha lecha tinenu ulezarecha, I'll give you this land, I am the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, etc. Your seed will be like the dust of the earth, you'll spread out, yama v'kedma, tzafana v'negma, through you all this. It gives him the bracha that he gave to Avraham. Guard you when you come back. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnato. Yaakov wakes up. Vayomer Achen Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh v'anuchi lo yadati. God is in this place. Vayira vayomar manara makom hazeh ki ein zeh ki im bet Elokim v'zashar hashamayim. House of God, gates of heaven. Vayashkim Yaakov b'boker. Vayikach et ha'even asher sam mirashotav. Took the stone that he had slept on. Vayasim ota matseva. Vayitzok shemen al rosha. And poured oil over it. Vayikrat shema makomuhu betel volam lu shema ila vishana. And then he took a neder. Pasuk bet. Veha even hazot. Asher samti matseva. Ye bet Elohim.
He carried that with him, didn't he?
No. Leaves there as a bit. Oh, we'll talk about that another time. But he makes this even a matzivah. Remember, assuming that he's in the place of Yerushalayim or the place of the Beit of the Beit Hamikdash, he makes this matzivah into the place of that will eventually be the Beit Elokim, the place of the Beit Hamikdash. So this matzivah is very important for us. This matzivah is made out of an
stone,
a single stone, a matzeva. A matzeva is made out of one stone. A mizbeach is made out of multiple stones. That's the key piece to understanding the distinction between a matzeva and a mizbeach. And why is that of any significance, and who cares if it's one stone or many stones? That's a question we will have to address. But I want to make this very clear, because this is very consistent. Mizbeach is always a construct of multiple stones. A matzeva is always a single stone, small or large. Evan gdola, or stone that he slept on as a pillow, makes no difference. But a single stone is a matzeva. Multiple stones is a mizbeach.
Even though the Medrash says this one stone could have been the combination.
Well, that, in my opinion, is why the Medrash says that. Because God made it into one stone. By the time Yaakov gets to the stone, it's one stone. It has to be one stone, or it can't be a mizbeach, a matzeva.
But was it that the mizbeachs were done like when they were more on the move? And a matzeva, is there more of a permanent structure?
Nope. Yeah. Nope. I don't think that's the issue at all. We have to look at what the issue is, but we've got a journey ahead of us.
Okay.
Now, one more. All right, but actually, before I move from these psukim, there's a play on the words in this story. What's the play on the words? It's a very important play. If Yaakov eventually turns the stone into a matzeva, there are two other places where the root of matzeva appears in this story. One is in the ladder, which is mutzav arza, and the other is Hashem, who is nitzav alav.
But you don't know which nitzav.
I don't know who it's on, whether it's on Shem is standing on the ladder,
right,
or on Yaakov. That's a separate conversation. Right. We'll come back to that. But the play on the word matzeva is a part of this whole story. And there's one more verse.
Very interconnected.
Absolutely. And there's one more verse that we need to look at before all of this becomes a mystery to us.
Indiana Jones.
No, Indiana Jones is... we're done with Indiana Jones. I've attempted to do that for many, many years. All the years that I've been teaching Tanakh, finally had my... got it out of my system. We're done. All right. Perek Tet Zayin. Tavarim Perek Tet Zayin. End of Perek Tet Zayin. Whole host of laws pertaining to the Chagim, pertaining to the Mikdash, beginning of Parshat Shoftim. Pasuk Chav Aleph and Chav Bet. Lo titalacha ashera kol etz. One of the things you're not allowed to do near the Mizbeach, near the Mikdash, is, this is Dvarim. Remember, Dvarim, they're already setting the groundwork for the land of Israel. They're preparing to go into the land of Israel. They are discussing all the laws of the Korbanot, the laws of the Mikdash, the Makom Hashiv Char Hashem, the place that God will choose to place his name there, a reference to Yerushalayim. Lo titalacha asherah kol etz, etz mizbach Hashem alakecha asher taselach. Near the Mizbeach, to God, that you're going to build as part of the Mikdash, one of the things you're not allowed to do is plant a tree. Why are you not allowed to plant a tree near the Mizbeach? Not only a tree, it's an Asherah.
Well, wasn't that considered Avodah Zarah?
Right, because the tree was a form of Avodah Zarah. Remember, they're walking into the land of Baal, the indigenous Canaanite pagan idolatry of Baal, which was a rain-worshipping fertility god. The Ashtaroth, Baal and Ashtaroth, was Baal and his consort Ashtaroth. Ashtaroth is a form of worship evolved in an Asherah, which is a kind of tree. They all vegetation, because of the focus on rain and fertility, is all interconnected. And Hashem says, near the Matzeva, near the Mizbeach, you may not plant any trees. Fine. Velo takim lecha matzeva asher sane Hashem elokecha. Nor may you establish a matzeva. Remember, matzeva you place, a mizbeach you build. Mizbeach havanim taaseli, right? You make a mizbeach out of stone. A matzeva you may not establish. Why? Asher sane Hashem elokecha, because God despises a matzeva. He loves a mizbeach, but he despises
a
matzeva. Prohibition in the Torah to make a matzeva, or to establish a matzeva in the context of the Beit HaMikdash, has to be a mizbeach, not a matzeva. Mizbeach, God desires; a matzeva, God despises. Now, obviously, anytime you attribute emotion to God, it's not a physical emotion as much as it is a reflection of his desire. His desire is for a mizbeach and not for a matzeva, and therefore it's described as God desiring a matzeva, but a mizbeach, and despising a matzeva. But that's only half the picture. The other half of the picture is, somebody explain the inexplicable distinction between why God desires a mizbeach and despises a matzeva.
Makes no sense.
Right? It's this is the mystery. What is it about a matzeva that was so abhorrent and fundamentally so different from a mizbeach? Right? Add to that, do we have a Hirsch here on Chumash? Yeah. Okay. Add to that the fact that, yeah, we do. It's that one right there. You pull out Dvarim. I forgot to put this on the source page. I apologize, but I'll show you what I mean. Thanks. Add to the mystery, the fact that you want to talk about God despising a matzeva because it's not something that's appropriate. I have a problem. Why do I have a problem? How can God despise a matzeva? What's my problem? How could it be that God despises a matzeva if, finish the sentence.
You got like a korban on a matzeva.
You can't. You could technically. You're not allowed to. Right. What's the problem? Nobody in Jewish life ever built a matzeva to God's content, not discontent.
Yaakov
built a matzeva. You always establish a matzeva. You don't build a matzeva. Yaakov set out a matzeva. God didn't say, "Hey, Yaakov, I hate this. What are you doing?" Right? Yaakov built himself, set himself up a matzeva. Who else? Who else established a matzeva? Avram built mizbeachs, right? They even shem mizbeach, three places. But Yaakov certainly set a matzeva, and we just read it. Vayiven shem mizbeach tachat ahar v'shnemesre matzeva l'shnemesre shiftei Yisrael. Who built matzevot? Who established matzevot? Moshe Rabbeinu. Immediately after Mount Sinai. Sorry, you can't tell me that God despises a matzeva, and then Moshe Rabbeinu goes and he builds 12 of them, and God says, "Hey, great, wonderful."
Well, he wouldn't have built them unless Hashem had told him.
Right? It's just the whole. It's weird. It's there's a problem here. There is a problem here. So, understanding that there's a problem here, the Medrash and Rashi and the Ibn Ezra and the Rabbah, like, they all jump on this issue to try to figure out what's going on here, and really, ultimately. To put it in very crass terms, who cares? One stone, multiple stones, big deal. 50,000 people in Beit Shemesh didn't pay for their lives because they put the aron on a matzeva instead of a mizbech. Evan Gdola instead of a mizbech, I can't believe, is the result of 50,000 people paying, being killed. So what's really going on here? So first of all, dealing with the question of the avot. So take a look in source number 3 on the source page. V'lo tekim lecha matzeva asher sanei Hashem Elokecha. The Sifri, understanding this issue, it says in the time of the Avot they built them as matzeva. Says the Sifri, matzeva she'ahuva le'avot snu'a le'banim. The same matzeva that was beloved in the time of the Avot is now despised in the time of the children. Meaning, what is the Sifre trying to do? It's trying to say, wait a second, there's a problem here. The Torah says in Dvarim, with regard to the generation coming into the land of Israel, God despises a matzeva. Yaakov built a matzeva. Moshe built a matzeva. What's going on? Says God. In the days of the Avot, previous generations, God loved Matzeva. Now something switched. Something's changed. Now God hates them. Why?
What's the Rashi and what's the
Inu? So that's one possibility, and that's what Rashi suggests, that in fact the issue isn't so much a generational issue, but a geographical issue. Take a look at Rashi, source number four. First of all, Rashi tells you what the difference is between a matzeva and a mizbeach. Matzeva evan achat, lakriv alea afilu l'shamayim. Matzeva is one stone that you set aside to bring korbanot, even if your korbanot are to God, even if it's l'shamayim. God says, no. Asher sane, God despises, says Rashi. Mizbeach avanim u'mizbeach adama tziva lasot. God commanded to build a mizbeach of stone and a mizbeach of stones or a mizbeach of dirt. Back in Shmos. Ve'etzusane. Why does God despise this? Ki chok hayta l'knanim. Because that was the practice of the Canaanites. Ve'af apisha hayta ahuva lo bimei ha'avot. And even though the days of the forefathers, Abraham, before the coming to the land of Israel, God, he didn't have any problem with the matzeva. He desired it, he loved it. Achshav san'a. Now it's despised. Why? Mechar sha'asuha elu chok la'avodat kochavim. Because now the Canaanites had made it into an idolatry. Since they made it into an idolatry, we're not allowed to do it.
So how do we come back to billing to doing a matzeva for everyone who asks?
A matzeva is very different from what the Torah is talking about a matzeva. What we talk about a matzeva on a stone on a grave, it's a whole different concept. That's just a stone set on a grave. We're talking about a matzeva as a mizbeach. A matzeva in lieu of a mizbeach. We're talking about a matzeva in the context of a mikdash. It's a different kind of matzeva. It shares in connection to a grave only a name, but not in any other way functional.
What function
purpose.
Do you serve a matzeva?
That's a question I'm going to see. That's a question. Now, you understand that to suggest that just because the Canaanites made matzeva, therefore suddenly the whole attitude towards matzeva changed is problematic. And so Ibn Ezra, again, just to understand how complicated this is, the Ibn Ezra tries to identify this and says, wait a second, a matzivah by itself is not a problem. The matzivah is only a problem if it's l'avodah zarah. V'ha'ed asher saneh rak matzivah shelo l'avodah zarah inena asura. If it's a matzivah that's not for the sake of idolatry, it's fine. And the proof is in Yaakov's matzeva. So Ibn Ezra took a different tack. He said it's got nothing to do with forefathers, generational Canaanites, etc. It has to do with your purpose. If your matzeva is to avodah zarah, that's saneh. If your matzeva is to God, that's ahuv. Right? That's the problem is halachically it doesn't work because you weren't allowed to build a matzeva even if it was l'shamayim, even if it was for God, even if it was for a mikdash. You weren't allowed to build a matzeva, and therefore, even though the Ibn Ezra might be more accurate in the pshat, but halachically, it doesn't work. I'll show you one more attempt.
How would you know the difference? I mean, how would the outside world, people over there, know that your matzeva is not, you know...
They wouldn't. They wouldn't.
Not, you know. Yeah. I mean, how would you know?
They wouldn't, which is why Rashi says this answer doesn't work.
Right.
Well, that's why the Ibn Ezra, how can he even...
I agree. Sorry. I apologize. This isn't going to help me at all. Because what he says is, we have already worked out in Genesis 28 and 33 the relation of matzeva to mizbeach. Oh, okay, it goes on. Okay. And have remarked how the matzeva, a stone taken from God's creation. This is Hirsch. So understand, this is Hirsch attempting to address this issue. We're going to take a different line altogether next week, but I just want us to see what Hirsch... Understand how difficult this issue was. Because one stone versus multiple stones, and suddenly the world turns upside down. So Hirsch, classic Hirsch style, right, understood this very symbolically. Matzeva is a stone, a single stone, right? So a single stone means it's in its natural state. It's a stone taken from God's creation. Represents a memorial to that which God has done for us in nature and history. That which God has done, because it's natural. Whereas a mizbeach, which is a structure built up out of several stones by human hands, is meant to represent the devotion of human activity to God.
That sounds fair, if you ask me.
A difference in which we believed we could see why the matzevah, which had been ahuva la'avot, the matzevah which had been loved by God when he made by forefathers, was expressed here as being snu'a labanim. Why? Before Matan Torah, it was, after all, the rule of God in nature and history which had to be recognized in its exclusiveness in the minds of men. And no complete individual and national life existed yet, which, by its submission to God's Torah, was to be a manifestation of homage to God. It's before Matan Torah, you wanted to express your faith in God. What did you do? You represented it by a symbol of the matzevah, your recognition of God of nature, God of history, God of control. Right? Because there's no specific code of action that we are given in the Torah, because it's pre-Matan Torah. So there was still place for the matzevah next to the mizbeach. But with Matan Torah, the matzevah concept is not only included in and absorbed by the mizbeach, but the matzevah becomes sinful. Merely worshipping God in his greatness and the Almighty is and his all might is not only a form of homage, which is not pleasing to God, but as the text expresses, it's henceforth despised, because it does not seek to express the moral submission of the whole of the human being to his law, to his Torah. It is our obedience which is to be the expression of our recognition of and homage to God. He measures our recognition of his greatness and all might by the amount of our devotion to his will, and rejects every homage to him in nature and history which places heaven and earth over his mastery, but denies this mastery over oneself, one's heart, one's mind, and desires and actions. In other words, what shifts, says Hirsch, between Matzeva and Mizbeach is actual Matan Torah. The moment you give Bnei Yisrael the Torah, then the focus of our religious expression shifts from seeing God, having a pure emunah, which is the matzeva, to the devotion that is reflected in the submission of human action and human will to God's dominion. The mizbech, which we build, is part of the mitzvot of the Torah. That's Hirsch's explanation.
I like it.
It's a very beautiful piece. In and of itself, I think it's correct, right? I don't think it sufficiently addresses all of the issues in the text of Tanakh on a pshat level, especially it doesn't help us in the Beit Shemesh story.
But on the outside, it makes a lot of sense.
Conceptually, it's a logical distinction, but we're not out of the woods yet. So what we need to do is Zot Hashem for next week. Excuse me?
Do you want that still?
You can look at it or put it back. Right, what we are going to do with Zot Hashem next week is review briefly this issue of the Mizbech and the Matzevah, and then I'm going to share with you a different approach that I think has a more Tanakh-centered approach that will help us understand what happened to Bet Shemesh. We're going to stop here.